Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Practical spirituality. Positive messages. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Fort Worth, Texas. Thanks for tuning into this show and all the other shows on the Unity Online Radio Network. Today, I welcome the author of The Green Burial Guidebook, everything you need to plan an affordable, environmentally friendly burial. Elizabeth Fortier is the owner and operator of Cornerstone Funeral Services in Boring, Oregon. I presume that's how it's pronounced, Boring, a fully green funeral home. And she's on the board of directors of the for the North American Natural Burial and on the advisory board of the Green Burial Council. So it's a pleasure to welcome Elizabeth to today's show. Welcome. Glad you're with us.
I'm thrilled, and yes, Boring, Oregon. You said it exactly how it is. Now, you pronounced it correct, but it's not boring here. It's fantastic.
Nope, no place in Oregon is boring. It's just too beautiful a state, isn't it? Yeah.
It's green and luscious.
Interesting name. Yeah, absolutely. You know, lots of us fear death, obviously. We're not looking forward to it, and yet we're all going to die, as they say. We kind of put it off. We don't want to really think about it too much. Or we're a little superstitious about it, and we're easily affected by fears around it and maybe guilt or whatever. And the funeral industry as it exists today, you know, is a powerful force, isn't it? It lobbies for keeping it that way in a sense. You know, there was that famous Mitford book, The American Way of Death, which was written back in the late 50s, early 60s, I think. But it's still, unfortunately, a little bit like that, you know, that we spend huge amounts of money. We're kind of afraid not to. We feel like we're not doing our deceased loved ones well if we only give them a cheap casket or a coffin or whatever. So there's a whole lot of emotional baggage that goes along with it. And so I know green burial is kind of an alternative to that, isn't it? And sort of shifting it away from some of the ways we've done funerals in the past. So I know your book is sort of advocates for that, right?
Yes, and like Jessica Mitford, I'm happy to let people know that you don't have to buy it, even though it's right in front of you. But unlike Jessica Mitford, I'm somebody who's in the industry who can talk a little bit more, maybe more reverent about the fact that there is a purpose for the funeral industry. The funeral industry has come along the way it is. Ultimately, that idea of wanting to care for loved ones has been skewed a little bit by monetary reasons. But we want to really get ourselves back to understanding the real concept of why we're here, how we can enhance our spirituality and our grief and do all the things we need to do to move forward without feeling like we need to spend $12,000 to do so.
You know, I know a lot of people say, well, I can't afford to spend that kind of money, so I think I'm going to have my loved one cremated as an alternative. And a lot of people think it's a more of a healthy alternative than spending a lot of money to have the body slowly decomposing in the ground. But in the book, you talk about cremation as being not necessarily a good environmentally friendly alternative, right? Because it uses a lot of unnatural methods also.
Yeah, it's not the most environmentally friendly method. people will say that they don't want to waste ground space and they don't want to put their body into the ground. They'd rather just have it cremated. But the problem is what you're really doing is putting your body into the ozone, because what's happening is there is so much of things inside of us. There's mercury and carbon monoxide and heavy metals, even radioactivity from pacemakers. All these things are going out into the planet. It's polluting. It's going out into the air. All of that comes down to the earth when the rains happen. It filters it right back. It goes into the animals, to the fish. It goes back into our bodies. And it's sort of this vicious circle of a lot of really bad chemicals and things, as well as the fossil fuels, like you mentioned. To be able to have a machine up to 1,800 degrees and sustain that for a couple hours, you've got to assume that's probably a lot of butane or a lot of gas, a lot of natural gas, or whatever you want to do to light that and keep it going. So we're trying to get away, and there is something more economical out there as well as more environmental. We have some natural cremation concepts I'd love to share with your listeners at some point too.
Yeah, because I always thought, well, that makes sense, you know, the cremation aspect. But then having read the book and, you know, and you, what you just discussed, it's like, that's not that effective either, you know. And the idea of without in the ozone is not is a kind of scary concept, isn't it? I'd rather be a little more organic than that, you know, and I don't want to contribute to, you know, problems that we already have that's, you know, leading to the great difficulties in our world. So we want to do as much as we can to lessen that. You know, you talk a little bit about the history of burial, and it's quite a fascinating one, isn't it, over the years. And, of course, a lot of what we know about humanity, you know, in terms of study of the human being as in history comes from burials, right? A lot of what we know about the ancient Egyptians is from their tombs, and the Mesopotamians, etc., etc. So these are the things that have been preserved when other things, other aspects of their culture have decayed. Are there particular burial practices that you resonate with, you know, in terms of worldwide practices?
Well, I really love the concept of laying our loved one naturally into the ground. There are some cultures who really are high on cremation. I think in Switzerland it's about 85%. In Japan it's nearly 100%. They're tinkering with the idea in Sweden of freeze-drying people and turning them into compost. I find that interesting, but I really love that idea of what we do and probably what, you know, 90% of the world does is merely lay their loved one to rest in the open soil. And everything inside that body can go back and can nourish and replenish. And it's a pretty fantastic thing. It's what we call traditional burial. What we do nowadays is now called modern burial, the concept of embalming a body, placing that body into a metal casket, then placing that embalmed metal casket into the bottom of a grave, which has a burial vault, which would be a concrete liner surrounding the grave to keep everything perfectly steady where it is with the earth. That's really what we consider as the American way of death, and that's the really expensive cost that you see on the commercials that talk about the $10,000 funeral. So getting back to how we used to do stuff, and of course my favorite way of doing things, not only is it saving the environment, but it's really saving a bunch of the cash in the wallet. Something really important to think about.
Well, you had some statistics about the amount of concrete and timber that's used, you know, in funeral plots or whatnot. It's quite phenomenal. You know, you could build huge buildings with the amount we put down in the ground. And it comes down to this idea we fear change, right? The idea that if we can hermetically seal the casket in a vault, you know, so it's stable. You know, nothing in the universe is stable. Everything flows. Everything's moving all the time. And yet we've got this concept that, oh, no, we can't have, you know, daddy or mommy or grandma or whatever it is moving around in the earth, you know, that'd be horrific. But really to keep them in a sort of a false stasis underground, because eventually those items are going to decay, presumably, you know, even though they're sealed in these caskets. It's putting off the inevitable, really. It speaks to our discomfort with actually embracing the whole process, right, of birth and death. And mm-hmm. I think embalming's a bit like that. You know, I'm a minister, so I've been at many funerals and many caskets and seen many of the cosmetically improved faces, you know. And I guess for some it's comforting to see their loved one, you know, looking nice or whatever. In a way, it's kind of strange because, you know, the person is dead now. We're turning them into something that they may never have looked like. They very rarely look like they did when they were alive. You know, they have a sort of a strange, like I said, enhanced, cosmetically enhanced image about them. But you talk a lot in the book about embalming's not necessary, right?
Right. Yeah, it's not really necessary. States make their own rules, and there isn't any sort of a state rule which says embalming needs to happen. And as a matter of fact, there's very few instances where it is something necessary. You know, we do, in America, we like to preserve our loved one. We really have this concept of going to a visitation and seeing them and having them look lifelike. And part of that used to be called closure, but the funeral industry came along and decided they would make that an integral part of the service. We would go ahead and we would have chemicals, preservatives, we'd preserve this person, make them look alive, beautiful, have them resting in the parlor. So we'd give people that sense of peace and the idea that the funeral home is, you know, doing what they're supposed to do. They'll go lay to rest in eternity and be lovely as they ascend on their way to heaven. But we are finding that a lot of those items that are placed into a grave, you're putting off the inevitable, really. We're getting rusting metal caskets and things do break down. The difference is none of that goes to help the soil, to help the permaculture or the ecosystem. It's just really leaving black marks on our ecosystem. It's something
right.
really important. I would love to give numbers. You'd mentioned that I have some statistics in the book, and people really can resonate to numbers and really the beautiful graphic pictures. If you think about it in these terms, there is about 800,000 gallons of formaldehyde, which is that can fill over probably 100 million Olympic swimming pools annually, of how much embalming fluid we use. If you just really think about that, that is a huge, vast amount of fluid, which isn't necessary. It's just being sold to us by the funeral home. And then you could actually rebuild the Golden Gate Bridge annually. So rather than have all that metal for caskets, which will just be sitting in the ground, not doing anything, we could be rebuilding bridges. I mean, can you imagine that? All the cars that go across that, people who are alive needing some sort of a leverage between two pieces of land. I mean, those are those resources that we're taking away from everyday life in order to have a very, very expensive casket that we buy off a showroom in a funeral home. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, does it?
Not to me, but I guess to a lot of people it makes sense because they want, like we said, something beautiful for the loved one, you know, and the more you spend, the more you love the person, right? I think there's that idea that to the more ornate the casket, etc., you know, the more we respected our loved ones. And also, even if we didn't respect them, it sort of assuages our guilt. You know, well, we did buy a beautiful casket for such and such, even though she was a bit of a son of a gun when she was alive. You know, we did it right, you know. So there's that sense. It's not the highest motivation, but I think sometimes that happens too. Either way, you know, we could be preyed on by, and we're in a very vulnerable mode often, aren't we, when we've lost a loved one. And so we're easily suggestible, you know, when somebody says you've got to do the best for your loved one. Of course we do, you know, so spend a little more money, in other words, on that. So, it's tough.
We probably need to look inside ourselves, and why are we thinking spending more money is doing the best we can? I mean, I think a lot
exactly.
of us have really lost tune with our spirituality, with religion, or with any concept of why are we here in the first place, and to have guilt because somebody has transitioned on or because somebody has left their body. Again, the last thing we can do, all of these sort of things, you know, you love this person, you probably did the best you could, hopefully, while they were here, and to atone yourself by opening up your checkbook doesn't quite, you know, you're a person of the cloth, it doesn't quite equal a lot of sense.
Right, yeah, but, you know, we're not here to condemn either the funeral industry or people's motivations, right? We're just noting these things. If you're guided in that direction, that, you know, we understand that. There's no judgment associated with it. But we are pointing out that maybe there's a higher way. You know, maybe there's a more elegant way we can approach our lives and our death. Because in a way, if you can't look at death, you know, they say death is the most important subject of any spiritual path. You know, it's coming to terms with our own transitory nature. And unless we can do that effectively, we can't live effectively, I don't think. You know, unless you realize how magnificent and precious this time on Earth is, you're not really fully alive. So, you know, hiding it or denying it or hoping it won't go or it'll go away, even though we know it won't, you know, is not helpful in the larger sense of things. And I know some people won't even talk about death with their children or whatever. We don't want to get into that, you know, that's negative. But we're doing a disservice, I think, if we don't, you know, give our children an understanding that everything has a cycle, you know, and that's perfectly natural and normal. We're surrounded by death at all times, aren't we?
Yeah. And also, you know, I find, too, families will come into the funeral home, and they'll talk about what they want to do. Now, I'm a full-service funeral home. I help families with a traditional service, a modern service, a cremation, anything that they want. But while we're discussing things, I always ask them, you know, maybe if we can incorporate some sort of shade of green or some sort of shade of saving the green in their wallet and trying to find a way that we could do something a little bit less expensive. And if they don't have a lot of means, then I can also encourage them to possibly buy a casket from some artisan. They feel like somebody down the street could make something out of pine, or they could use a shroud of just some material that they've come up with, or even a cardboard box. So I'm able to open up and expand the horizons for them so they realize there's all these options where they still can feel like they're celebrating their loved one, doing the best they can for them, but not having to spend $10,000 on a casket. So it's kind of neat to have conversations and really be able to have dialogue when somebody has passed away.
Well, it's very cool that, you know, you can go to a full-service funeral home like yours, you know, where those options are available. I know a lot of people maybe would like to do a more natural burial, you know, a green burial, but then they think, well, where do I go? I don't know anybody. The funeral home doesn't seem to know anything about it. It's going to, you know, be a lot of hassle and bother to do this. I even though it makes sense to me, I'm not going to do it because it's not convenient, you know. So I think that's part of it, isn't it? We need more and more people to be open to this so that it's not an aberration anymore. It's not just what some people, very few people do, but is a genuine alternative. And in the back of your book, by the way, and this is helpful for our listeners, is a listing of various cemeteries, whatever, that and funeral homes that do have natural burial practices, and it's listed by state. And I'm interested to see that there's a few in my area of Texas. So these places are available, and it's growing, right? That's I think you mentioned that in the book. This is something that's expanding.
Yeah, it's growing and expanding. And in your great state of Texas, there are very, very many. There's the traditional cemetery, which now is opening up and allowing grave spaces to be more natural where they're not requiring a burial vault. There's actually natural preserves that are opening up, which is where someone took a piece of land and decided they're just going to have natural burial take place. There's also a lot of funeral directors who work with very alternative methods. There is a wonderful website called the Green Burial Council, and what they do is they go through and they help vet businesses and products and services that want to offer green to families, if it's a funeral home or if it's going to be a cemetery. And there, state by state and province by province, you can see somebody listed who can help you. If you don't find anybody who's listed close by, get on those interwebs and Google, because there are so many, you know, home funeral assistants. There are so many end-of-life doulas. There's lots of different care categories of lots of different characters in the death and dying field who can really help you walk through these practices, let alone there's a lot of great books out there. So we're really opening ourselves up to how we can care for our own dead, who can help us do this, and then why it seems to be something really important, and it really enhances our own spirituality as well. That's another part that's extremely important to this, that helps with your own closure, your own grief, all of that, without actually having to feel like you have to spend money to do it.
Yeah, very good. And of course, we have this book itself, right? Your book, the Green Burial Guidebook, folks. It's very thorough, and we're going to go through some of the elements of it as we proceed through the show. But if you want to get hold of it, it's published by New World Library, is available in all the usual outlets. And if you want to get in touch with Elizabeth directly, she has a website, Elizabeth Fournier, Fournier, ElizabethFournier.com. So you can talk to her over the interwebs, as we said. But the book itself is very elegantly and gently written. And, I think we need this sort of graceful attitude when we're dealing with the death of a loved one. And this book certainly proceeds in that way. So if, I thought before, I usually do books on all kinds of subjects, but I'd never done one on burials before, on the show. And I thought, this is going to be interesting. How many people are going to be interested in this one? And I thought, yeah, but everybody should be, because we're all going to die. But I read the book and I thought, wow, this is fascinating. It's really interesting. And, I wish I'd known about it earlier, actually, in terms of my career as a minister, because I would have loved to have guided some people towards more natural methods, but it's good. It's never too late. So I'm glad these things are on the increase. Are we ever going to see sky burials in America, do you think? In Tibet, for instance, they put the dead ones out on platforms and let the vultures come and peck them and take the flesh and everything. There's some other cultures that do that. The Parsis in India put their dead ones on the Towers of Silence outside of Bombay and other places. And Native Americans, I think some peoples in the Native American part of this country is open to that too. But I don't think we're ready for it, are we?
Well, I was at a book signing in the state of Washington about a month ago, and a woman came up to me and she said she was going to make it her sole mission to bring sky burial to the United States. And I asked her a little bit about it. Yeah, she mentioned we have a lot of these turkey vultures, and a lot of states are very strong with them, and why can't we do this? And my thoughts to her was, if you are passionate enough about this, then find other like-minded, passionate people to support you, and then be able to talk about it, but be able to talk about it in a way that you can put people's fears to rest, because this is a very uncomfortable subject for most people. And I also told her this will probably be a slow process to get off the ground, because even though there is proof that people have done this and do this in other cultures, here in America, we are still a culture who likes to embalm people and look at them as lifelike. We still are relatively uncomfortable handling our own family members once they've passed away. And so the idea of laying your loved one out on a hill and having this sort of animalistic process happen, I'm not sure where we are with mindsets yet. I think there's obviously some people who find that absolutely fantastic, and then some are, a little put off. I have people who've talked to me about Viking burials and say, there's a pond in my yard. Why can't I put my loved one in a canoe and put them off to sail and take my arrow and decide to light it on fire? And that's just like outdoor cremation. Why can't I do that? Again, all these ideas, you have to get some sort of emissions of what we're looking at for the environment. We have to get some ideas of what people think. You really get lobbyists. You get these things on a bill. You vote for things per state, then they become a statute, then they become legal, and pretty soon it will be a form of disposition for a deceased body. So there's a lot of steps we have to go through, but I think just doing research and getting excited about it is probably the very first step, really feeling wholeheartedly that you're going to be offering something really amazing to people, and they just don't know it yet.
Right, exactly. And it's all, you know, part of this movement towards unity of understanding, you know, ecological understanding that, you know, it's not horrific to have a bird, for instance, peck a dead body. It's the idea that it's back to the earth again. It's back to the universe, you know, that all parts return. And so we're honoring that. We're lifting that up as a beautiful concept and idea. If some of us may have seen the burning ghats in India, you know, where they stack up the wood and put the deceased one on top and light the pyre, and you see the corpse being burned right in front of you, and in some cases not all quite burned up before they throw it in the river, and it floats down the river, and presumably the animals, the crocodiles, whatnot, finish it off. But, you know, but it's very visceral. And I think that's part of what's fascinating, isn't it? Is a lot of us want to return to a more visceral way of looking at things, a more earthy way of looking at things. You know, we don't want everything to be cosmetic and we're kept from reality, you know, from the cycles of growth and decay. And that there's something heartwarming about allowing that to happen. You know, I know a lot of people can't stand the flower once it starts to fade, you know, but that's part of the process, right? I mean, I'm not saying we should have all dead flowers in our homes, but maybe we should see the process and not just throw everything out when it's just past its peak. You know, to see it return back to the brown decayed parts is also important, I think, you know, and because it again, it enhances the beauty as it reaches its full zenith of beauty. But maybe
I love how you think.
Yeah,
fascinating stuff. And you know, we all find one part of that in there that works really well for us. And it's neat to know that there's other parts and there are other cogs in the wheel and makes it all work as a full picture.
And we'll look at that in the second segment. We're going to look at the plan and the ways we can approach a burial and all the various aspects, because Elizabeth goes into some detail. But let's take a break now. Listen to these messages from Unity. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Talk to you then.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
When listeners like you contribute to Unity Online Radio, you're making a positive difference in your life and the lives of other spiritual seekers. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate to make a one-time donation. Or sign up for monthly contributions. Thank you for your support.
Here's Eric Butterworth with a Unity Mindful Moment.
Jesus taught the infinite potential of man and the influence of the allness of God. And he said, "What I have done, you can do." This is the missing link in Christian religion. All that I have done, you can do too. Any great demonstration of law is repeatable. We tend to spend too much time looking to the people who demonstrate the law rather than the act of demonstration itself. Whenever anything is done, it can be done. The principle is, what God has done, God can do. And God can do for you because you are involved in the same infinite law. Practical metaphysics then deals with a repeatable Christ. But if Jesus demonstrated the law is demonstrable, therefore it can be done, and it can be done at any time by one who is in that consciousness.
To pick up the Eric Butterworth book, Practical Metaphysics, go to unity.org and click on Shop.
Since 1924, Daily Word has offered inspiration and practical teachings through daily prayer messages to help people of all faiths live happy, healthy lives. The magazine includes 2 months of daily affirmations, messages, articles, and spiritual poetry to help you get inspired. Subscriptions are available for print editions in large type and Spanish, as well as the digital subscription package that includes the online magazine with audio, smartphone app, and daily email. Get your subscription today. Visit dailyword.com or unity.org.
Discover Unity Village, and you'll find a peaceful oasis just 15 miles from downtown Kansas City, Missouri. If you're doing business in the area or looking for the perfect place for your retreat or conference, check out all that Unity Village has to offer. With 1,200 wooded acres, a beautiful nature trail, award-winning rose garden, golf course, and newly redesigned hotel and conference center, Unity Village has everything you need for that perfect event. Go to unityvillage.org to find out more.
Stretch your mind and open your heart every Thursday at 10 a.m. Central with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien and the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way. Gain insights into spiritual principles that touch upon the most practical aspects of our lives, like work, relationships, health, and diet. Discover time-tested practices from the ancient system of Kriya Yoga, a philosophy for living a more fulfilled life in today's hectic world. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello there. Welcome back to today's show. I'm with Elizabeth Bernier, and we're talking about her book, The Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial. This is a very attractive book with lots of information about how to do just that. In the first part, we talked about some of the philosophy of it and why we maybe it'd be helpful to move away from the industry we now have, you know, where we try and preserve the body through embalming and hermetically sealed caskets. Not that it is such a thing, really. It is going to decay eventually. But to a more natural, organic way of approaching burial. And the book literally does have everything you need to plan an affordable funeral. And it starts really with the various ways we can do that, right? There are, as we mentioned in the first segment, cemeteries that are open to green burials, but it's also possible to do it in unhallowed ground, right? We can do it in our own backyards in some states.
Exactly. So a green burial, just in case somebody had missed the first part of the show, a green burial is what we always did 150 years or so back all through the United States of America, and that's by taking a body which has not been embalmed or been preserved. It's not placing it into a metal casket or some sort of a wood casket with some fancy hardware on it, and then not placing that into a cemetery which says you have to have a metal or concrete or steel liner lining the grave to keep all the soil secure. So there's many cemeteries nowadays that are saying, yeah, I guess we really don't need to have that burial liner. You're welcome to go ahead and bring your loved one here. And cemeteries never state that you need to be embalmed. That's not a cemetery rule. That's not something that has to happen to be placed into soil. As well as cemeteries never regulate that you need to have any sort of a metal or a wood casket. Now, cemeteries can tell you what type of container you need to use, but normally if it's something with handles or straps, they can get somebody from the transportation vehicle, either a personal vehicle or a funeral home vehicle, and we can get that out to the grave, and it can fit into the grave space, you're pretty good. So most places will accept a cardboard box or a shroud or just some simple pine, whatever you need to do. Some states, fortunately for me, I live in the state of Oregon, and I am in a rural part of the county where I am. The rules read here that you can bury people on their own private property. They need to merely have 1 acre of land. They need to have a couple other things in place, such as away from a watershed, so many feet away from electricity, so many feet away from the main road, and somebody can go ahead and use a shovel or a backhoe and prepare their own space. And yes, of course, we have a death certificate signed off by a medical professional. There is a burial permit which does state that this burial will be on private land, so everything is above board, but people can do this at home. So it's going back to what we used to do prior to the Civil War. We used to bury people in their own yards, in the side yards, in the church yards, rather than give our loved one over to a funeral home who there would let you know about the local cemeteries and all the grave spaces you can buy. We would do something much more simply and much more naturally.
Right. And you, on page 50 of your book, you have comparative prices of a modern burial and as opposed to a green burial, and it's quite substantially less, isn't it? Because it takes a little more planning, perhaps, because it's not the norm. But if you want to save money, it's definitely worthwhile considering as well. You know, it's not just about money, but it is not just environmentally helpful, but it's helpful to our pocketbook as well. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly what you're saying. You are very right on. It's a matter of a lot of times at the funeral home, somebody passes away, you show up, and they give you a price list. And all funeral homes have to give you a general price list, which has the goods and services broken down. And you look at it, it's very overwhelming. And the funeral director kind of leads you through it and says, this is what we do for burial, this is what we do for cremation. And you pick your package, you sign on the dotted line, and off you go. The one thing people aren't always aware of is they can buy a less expensive casket online. Most states allow people to provide their own transportation. You can come into the funeral home, you can bathe your loved one, you can dress your loved one, you can do a lot of things, and that can really save a lot of money. Plus, maybe even the more important piece of the money is people really get a sense of helping their loved one. They get that spiritual feeding of, this is my mom, and rather than the last thing I can do for her is buy her a bronze casket, the last thing I can do for her is take a washcloth with some warm water and maybe some scented oil and maybe just sort of dab her with it and feel like I'm bathing her and just going through a ritual of sitting there and holding her hand and saying some nice words to her. I mean, what a lovely visual. People can do this at home. They can do it in the funeral parlor, and they can be guided through this in so many ways. And the book really allows people to see stories of other people who have done these things and for people to know it's okay to ask questions. If there's anything that you feel like you want to do, go ahead and ask.
Fascinating stuff. You know, I know that now a lot, some people are using doulas to help them with the, like a midwife situation, but now there's end-of-life doulas as well, right, that helps with that transition, and it's all part of that sense of reclaiming our right, you know. Back in the day, you know, you weren't allowed to be there with your own child's birth if you were a dad, you know. They just want you messing around, you know, this is too important. Nowadays, a lot of dads insist on being there, so there's been a shift, and I think the end of life is important too. And I love that concept of bathing our loved one, because what could be a more intimate and uplifting thing, you know, an honoring thing, way more honoring than just throwing some money and say, here's a beautiful casket. So it's reclaiming dignity both for ourselves and our loved ones, in a sense, isn't it? It's becoming more intimately involved with them in the whole process, you know. I remember when my first wife died of breast cancer, you know, somebody whisked it away, and, you know, we decided on cremation at the time. But if I thought about it some more, you know, I would have been more hands-on with that, but I was in total grief at the time. And I think that's the difficulty. We're not at our best sometimes when we're going through this. And again, unfortunately, the funeral industry knows this and, you know, is big into pre-planning and getting us to work all that through. It's helpful in a way. But it also feeds on our some of the lesser qualities, emotional qualities we talked about earlier. But you mentioned it takes a village, right? To do this, this chapter 5, it takes a village, getting help and hiring professionals. We talked about an end of life doula, but you know, we don't have to go it alone, right? There are people who can help us and be advocates for us.
Yeah, we don't have to go at it alone. Think back in the early 1800s, and somebody was on their last steps of life and they are preparing to die. Normally they were in a quiet room. There were people coming in to visit. People were bringing food into the house. When that person finally passed away, it was normally some ladies of the family or the congregation or the neighborhood who would come over and have some, just some nice rose water or something and bathe that person, dress that person. And all the houses had that big, beautiful front parlor. And the front parlor was created for a funeral parlor. That was really why it was there, so people could all gather, they could come in, they could spend time visiting that loved one after they'd passed away. And when everybody felt complete in that cycle, there was a large door. They could go ahead and take the person out of that room after they'd been placed into the homemade casket, the simple pine box, even the shroud from some sort of bedcloth or quilt. They could move out that door and then be in the cart, which led them to the backyard to the grave, or maybe on the simple horse and buggy that led them down the street to the church. And then from there, somebody would have prepared a space with some shovels. They'd be lowered gently into the embrace of the earth. There would be some prayers, some closure. Everybody would go back and break some bread and feast, and things happened. So you think about that. Now, that's a village. Those are people in your life, your tribe, your people, your community. Those are the ones who love you and who love that person, and you all stop what you're doing to come together to reflect. So nowadays, we're finding that there is lots of states that allow people to keep a loved one at home and not even hire a funeral home, but act as their own funeral director. And you can go through these steps of getting someone to sign a death certificate, transporting your loved one either off to the crematory or to a cemetery that allows natural burial, all the steps in between. And the book really guides you on how to do this yourself, what a home funeral guide is, what an end-of-life doula is. Do you want to hire a funeral home to do half these things? And it also lets you know where to go to find out the rules in your state, because all the states have different sets of rules. Some, like where I am in Oregon, says 100% your loved one never has to set foot in a funeral home after they die. You can do everything yourself. You can bury somebody in your yard. Other states say you really need to have a funeral home control the disposition. You can still, of course, make your own casket. You still can come into the parlor and spend time with your loved one. But nonetheless, we have to follow a little bit more of a rigid line of rules. So it's really interesting to see what we can do and what your personal plan of how you feel that you need to do this, how it plays into everything. And you probably will be surprised. You could be a lot more hands-on than you ever thought you could be.
Right, yeah. And, you know, we just don't know, I think. That's part of it. You know, we just don't understand that that's a possibility even. So the fact that, that needs to get out and then become more commonly available is important, that there's choices here. I know from my experience that in 30-some years of ministry now that, of course, comes from a Unity background. We're pretty open-minded as a denomination, more progressive, I guess you could say. Nobody wants a funeral. You know, everybody wants a celebration of life. And there's been that shift from, you know, the terminology of memorial services or funeral services to celebrations of life. And I think that's an indicator right there, you know, that we're celebrating the flow of life, even through death. Our loved ones are still with us. They just moved on. Their body may be going back to the earth, but we're celebrating all that they were and are. And I think that's healthy because it's taking it up out of this. You know, I grew up in Wales back in the 50s, and funerals there were very dour affairs. You know, nobody dared laugh or whatever. That's changed, I think, and I'm glad it has. The Irish have always known how to do this, right, with wakes and whatnot, where you get drunk on the side of the casket there. But it's also to reminisce and to celebrate the life. And I think it's so important to do that, right, that this is cause for celebration as well as grief.
Yeah, I think for a lot of years there was many health classes here in the United States who dabbled into teaching sex education. And they felt like, well, this is a biological part of life. This is something that we need to teach our young people. Some schools have adapted a curriculum of death education, because again, it's part of life. It's something we need to teach people. Just because you're talking about it doesn't mean it's going to happen instantaneously. Just because you decide to read a book about it, you're not, you know, forecasting your own death to come earlier. So the superstition of it, the ick factor, all of these things, there's ways that you can learn about what it would be like if someone in your life died without having to dabble or see too much of the visual. I find when I talk to folks about death and dying, I'm very reverent about it, and I try not to. I don't call a body a corpse, and I really don't talk about anything too graphic, because a lot of times people want to know, but they don't want to know too much. They're just not quite there yet. So I don't ever want to feel that somebody's going to have to hear all the steps that go into what a cremation process is, because it's just not what everybody needs to know or want to know. Those people that do specifically want to know, you can find all the information you need. It's all out there. But, you know, I think you need to know your own comfort level.
Right. Very good point. You know, but if you are serious about your practice, like, for instance, if you're a Buddhist monk, many Buddhist monks go out into cemeteries and spend the night meditating there, you know, in order to commune with the ghosts and feel comfortable with that whole idea that what's born is going to die. And they don't see it as negative. They see it as solitary, you know, important to their process, to their understanding. And some of the great saints and masters, you know, always had a skull on their desk, you know, to remind them that everything passes away, and so it's important to live life to the full, you know, to be aware of how precious life is. We're not all there, you know. We compartmentalize very easily, and we shove some of the distasteful things aside. But really, the embrace is hugely important, I think. And I'm glad you brought that up. It's not about fearing, oh, well, I'm thinking about death, and I'm inviting it to come. No, you know, you're doing it so that you can, again, live life more fully, because you're realizing all aspects of this this strange ball of wax, which is being alive on planet Earth. Okay, so you talk about containers. You can make your own container. There's even shrouds, you know, how to fold a shroud. So I'm telling you, folks, this book will give you every detail you need. And various options too, because you have cardboard and fiberboard containers and all kinds of things here. Green embalming. We don't have to just do it the formaldehyde way, right? There is a more ecological embalming method that some use now.
Yeah, and what I have, you know, learned, ultimately, the big picture of my job being a funeral director is to provide all of the options and let the family make their own choice. And I'm always proud to say, not only do you not have to be embalmed, but there are chemicals which are more green of nature, trying to take out the formaldehyde, kind of be a little bit more of the oil-based. There are some funeral homes who will go ahead and embalm with these. There's some who have no idea what you're talking about, but it can't hurt to ask the questions. Some people would say, oh my goodness, I don't think any cemetery here would allow a cardboard box. Well, it can't hurt to call and ask. And they might say, oh, we need a rigid board underneath that to allow it going down. Or they might say, gosh, we've never done that before. Why not? But it's really how these laws and rules and all of these start, is by people asking the questions, and then two people are asking the questions, and before you know it, we're moving forward. I wanted to touch on something which I'm really thrilled to tell people about, which is the green cremation. We have about 10, 12 states that say yes, we can have a water cremation, an aqua cremation. And this is the idea of, rather than using the high heat and the flame, we're using a water bath. And we aren't using any chemicals. It's an alkaline hydrolysis method. And water is simply being pressurized, washing over the body. The body follows a real natural trajectory to go ahead and break down. And then from there, we have a skeleton, just like you would with a standard cremation. that cremate, then from their skeleton we get down to what is cremated remains, so you still receive an urn back that have ashes or cremated cremains in there for you to do whatever you want to do with them. They, just getting to that process, has about a zero carbon footprint, and all that water that's left over inside the machine doesn't go down the drain. Here locally we have a contract with the man who runs a natural burial forest, and he uses it at his, as his fertilizer. Rather than plugging up his fertilizer machine to chemicals, he merely uses this water. There's other machines that contract that out to pig farmers or seed farmers, so all this gets yet again another purpose. So it's really, really quite a beautiful way to go, and you can find out if this is something legal in your state. And we have that here in Oregon. So again, it's one more method of disposition people can use, which is really, really environmental.
I know a lot of people like the concept of planting a tree above their body. You know, that when I die, I want a tree to be there to represent me. That's realistic, isn't it?
Pretty much. You cannot grow a plant or a tree from cremains because the pH level of the cremains is really high, but you can also rake cremains into the soil. You can also have the cremains much lower in the soil. So we have the root ball getting nourished itself by the actual fungi and the spores and everything inside the soil. So when the tree grows, in essence, the cremains are planted in the same area, but they're not so dense that they're, you know, killing off anything or, you know, inhabiting that tree from not being able to grow. There's a concept of an ecoforest. That's something we have in the state of Washington, where it's just trees in a forest, and you can be buried between the trees, which is lovely. It's called Herland Forest. And in Italy, they're working on these ecopods, where you would be buried inside this wonderful tree ball placed into the ground, and then rather than a burial park, you would have a burial forest. And that's pretty fascinating to think about. You see this on the internet a lot. It's called Capsule of Monday. I get asked about that. What about those really neat Italian trees? But, again, not a legal method of disposition in the United States, but people in different cultures are working on different things, and it will be fascinating what gets unveiled as time goes on.
I think you mentioned that England is, you know, it's got quite a few natural burial places now, green burial places, yeah?
Yeah, the idea, what they call it garden burial because it's done in your yard quite a bit. And they were really the first starters of this. This was really something we can thank England for. This was something big, and from there it jumped across the pond. Our first natural cemetery was in, you know, Ramsey Creek area there in South Carolina, and then we went from there, and now they're all over the place. At least every state has one cemetery that allows natural burial, and there's a lot of these wonderful either conservation grounds or natural burial grounds that really allow this to happen, and we're really opening up our doors to all the possibilities of keeping things green.
Yeah, that's very cool. So we covered a lot of ground. What have I missed? What would you like to convey to the listeners in the last few minutes of our show?
I think it's important that you make a plan while you're still with us. You think about what is important to you, what you want to see your exit from life look like to the best of your ability, and then once you're no longer here, what do you want that to look like? And I always want to kind of put a little note in there. Sometimes families will say, okay, well, when I die, I want my ashes to be scattered into the volcano in Hawaii and, you know, on this day or whatever. If you really think about that, you're really putting a lot of pressure on somebody to get plane tickets and get there and make this happen. It's probably unrealistic in a lot of people just in general. So that family will always be holding on to those cremains waiting for that to happen, and they'll feel like they failed you. So I think making a plan isn't something so ostentatious and large and something which might not happen, but the idea of, do you want to have a natural burial? Does it sound comforting, the idea of being in a simple shroud or going to the fabric store and having something made out of some Hawaiian plumeria flowers because you've always loved luaus? And would you want to maybe go and get this ahead of time and stitch this together and have it? So important things to mention is when you are having someone in your life who's passing away, always drink your water. I think that we forget that. We need to take care of ourselves because we're still here left. We're still here trying to deal with these things. Our sleep is off. Our emotions are off or raw, or we're just trying to function. If you can make your own plan to help your peoples who are going to be left behind, let them know what your wishes are. Boy, that certainly helps. I think it's just a real wonderful gift you can give to somebody to prearrange your own thoughts, make all of your information simple, a bright colored folder to go ahead and put down where your bank accounts are or who holds your mortgage, all these little things we don't think about. If you are starting to get to the point, if you think you will be leaving the earth, put somebody else on your bank account, allow people to have access to your life, and just let your wishes be known. Really important.
Right. Good advice. Well, we're approaching the end of the show. Like I said, folks, if you want to get hold of this book, it's called The Green Burial Guidebook. If you want to hear more from Elizabeth, you can go to her website, elizabethfournier.com, and very useful book. And I've learned a lot of myself, and I've been doing funerals professionally for many years as a minister, and learned a whole lot of stuff. So I know anybody reading this is going to find it valuable. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Elizabeth. Next week, Mary Muller Shutan joins me to talk about her book. It's called Body Deva, Working with the Spiritual Consciousness of the Body. You know, there's that old idea that there's a separation between body and spirit, but I think they are one. You can't have the one without the other. And so she's going to look at those, the essence, the spiritual essence and wisdom, and love, actually, the compassionate nature of the body and how we can be gentle with our body. So the Body Deva, Working with the Spiritual Consciousness of the Body. But right now, I want to thank Elizabeth very much for being on the show. It's been very informative, an important subject, and I'm glad you could be here with us to share it.
Thank you for your kindness, and also thank you for your willingness to talk about a subject which is a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, there we go. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And thanks for listening, folks. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon. All right.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.